Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You've got me and Lotus as usual, and we are digging into the evidence, the little bits of evidence that are out there about when the Elder Scrolls 6 will release, because we're getting close to the end of the year. It's 2025, it's November. This is the usual release window for these types of games, and clearly we're not getting Elder Scrolls 6 this year, but we might be within a year or two away, and I think that there's some evidence that we can go over that will help solidify that. So that's what we're doing today. We're going into this. We're going to look back to an interview from 3 years ago with Todd Howard and check out some of his words. And we're also going to play back the music from the teaser trailer, because there may be even some hints in the music about what's going on in the Elder Scrolls 6, because it's not the same music that's been in the series yet at all. It was made for the new game. So Lotus, welcome back. How you doing? Are you excited to talk about this?
I'm pretty good. And just in regards to, you know, one of these speculation episodes that people seem to like us doing, you know, we do joke that, you know, we'll never, you know, we'll all be gone by the time Elder Scrolls 6 comes out. But, you know, what with it having some type of date on the, I would assume, nearing horizon. One of the things that's interesting is, I don't know if you heard the news earlier today when we're recording this, but Grand Theft Auto 6 was delayed out of this year.
It was.
Speaking of like holiday type of things, could you imagine how wild it would be to get Elder Scrolls 6 and Grand Theft Auto 6 at like in the same year?
Oh man, that would be, yes, a lot of competition there. I mean,
the ultimate feast or famine, where it's like, oh, just kidding. This is just like two of the longest awaited things ever in gaming. Right. We'll just launch them in the same year and just give people no time to do anything.
Yeah, it's been like over a decade for both of them. They're both really, really long. But we're coming up, speaking of that, we're coming up on the 15th anniversary of the Skyrim announcement at the Game Awards, which is coming up in December. So it's actually the same date, I believe, as 15 years ago. So there's some speculation we may get something this year, kind of another teaser saying like, hey, this is on the horizon, it's coming. But here, let's get into some details, because
also, it's been 15 years. It's coming up on 15 years since Skyrim, not since the announcement, just so people don't crucify you in the comments.
So is it the Skyrim,
the game came out in 2011,
the announcement came out the year before in 2010 in December. This will be December of 2025.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Elder Scrolls 6 announcement.
No, the Elder Scrolls 5 announcement, the Skyrim announcement.
I misunderstood.
15
I was like,
years ago.
What?
Okay. Sorry. Thanks for some clarity. Gotcha. Maybe I didn't say it clear enough. But
gotcha.
Yeah. No, so 15 years, it's been 15 years since the Skyrim announcement.
Yes.
Which is crazy. Correct. But, you know, Todd loves these very specific types of numbers and that kind of stuff. So who knows? I guess we're going to have to see. But what triggered this? We, of course, are going over the plans for like episodes. And we've been going over the books, and we talked about Daggerfall and Battlespire recently and some of the books for those. But I was like, you know what? It's time to talk about this again, because we just need to get a little bit of an update. And I was browsing around on Reddit, and there is a TESVI, so Elder Scrolls 6 subreddit, and a user by the name of Kuchiki Byakuya, probably nailed
rolls
that.
Off the tongue.
Yeah, rolls right off the top. Posted a little article here. Call it an article because it's a little bit longer than just a tiny little post that says easing the wait for TES6 speculation and analysis. And they laid it out very nicely. So very good job, Kachiki, if I'm saying that correctly, but kind of laid out some evidence for the development of Starfield and the things that have been talked about by Todd in interviews and things like that, that kind of lead us into a certain understanding of when this might be coming out. So I want to recap that to start out this episode, and then we'll get to some interview stuff in a little bit. But here, let's just dig into it. Starfield's development time, and I'm just going to quote directly from this. It says, as we all know, Starfield began pre-production, and hold on to these dates as I bring them up, in 2015, 10 years ago, after the release of Fallout 4, and it didn't start the full production until March of 2019. Thank you, Starfield Compendium, for this information. Todd Howard confirmed that the game has suffered various slowdowns to COVID and Creation Engine 2 overhaul taking longer than expected, which postponed the first internal release date of 2021 and second date of 2022. So if we look back on that, initial pre-production starts 2015, and then full production starts 2019, and then we don't get the game until 4 years later in 2023. Right? So 4 year full development time plus pre-production before that. And in the interview, Todd's going to go over a little bit of how this is which interview is this? This is Lex Friedman's interview from 3 years ago now, but he lays out how much time it takes for pre-production and how much time it takes to actually get into full production and sets kind of some standards with the games. And we'll get into that in a little bit more detail. But here, let's keep going with the article, because then we'll chime in with some more stuff. Between February and May of 2021, various journalists, including Tom Warren, Jez Corden, and insiders like Nate the Hate, confirmed that they heard rumbling about an official first look of Starfield taking place at the E3 show in June. This rumor did in fact become true, and the game did actually show up with a trailer and release of 11/11/22 by the time they released the trailer on June 13th, and the game was in full production for 2 years and 3 months. They were pretty confident that despite all the slowdowns and hiccups. Of course, the game ended up to be initially delayed to the first half of 2023 due to polishing before committing to the ultimate release of September 6, 2023. In my opinion, without COVID and engine overhaul delay, the game would have come out sooner. So, Lotus, we have kind of a standard here for the general amount of time they expected it to take, but then pushbacks due to COVID, which of course, they're not the only game company that saw things getting delayed two or three years.
Because even without just getting too far from the core of the series we, you know and love for here, it seems like the original plan for the Oblivion remaster fell victim to that too, where it was delayed. It was like that looked like what with those documents that got unintentionally leaked and that whole buyout thing of Microsoft. It shows exactly the same problem where it's just like these were way behind schedule as a result of this stuff.
Right. So Indiana Jones was on that list.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
All of those games are offset by like two to three years.
Fallout 3 remaster that's inevitable.
Right. All of that stuff is offset by 2 to 3 years. So that gives us some insight into it. So go back over the numbers real quick. We have 2015 to 2018 is Starfield pre-production, 3 years-ish. 2019, March of 2019, full production starts. Release happens in September of 2023. So 3.5 years, right? So now pre-production, roughly 3 years. Production, 3.5 years with delays. Specifically, COVID delays, and on top of that, pre-production for Starfield included major overhauls to the Creation Engine.
Which I do think helped in a lot of ways. I'm hopeful that some of the drawbacks that they still ran into with Starfield will not reappear in The Elder Scrolls 6.
Yes.
Because although the engine is notably much better than, you know, as that's actually been one of the longest standing complaints and requests from, you know, the whole Bethesda game studios thing, it's definitely better, still has room for improvement. And the fact that there was so much being done last minute, so to speak, where it literally had the game miss its initial idea of a release window, shows that they're still kind of ironing out some of the problems with it, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're always updating the engine. There's always improvements that they're making. I think that's going to be a big part of it. In chat, Blue Ridge says, I felt like sequels used to come out a lot faster back in the day, like companies planned them out a lot more in advance. You're right. They did come out faster, but it's because the development wasn't as complicated. We saw this a few times over the last, say, 25 years. The move from standard definition to HD made studios like double and triple their size because the assets, the requirement to make even more clear and precise assets ballooned. You went from a studio where like a small percent were arts people and a small percent were coders and another percent were, you know, the marketing team and the writers and those kinds of things, to all of a sudden the design side of the team for visuals and graphics started becoming way bigger than the other groups on the team. And then as we move into the 2010s, into where we are in 2025, studios have continued to just expand. And with bigger multi-hundred individual studios, you lose a certain level of efficiency in your design, but you also start tackling bigger and bigger projects. So that has pushed out the design. And this is, again, this isn't just a Bethesda thing. You know, look at Grand Theft Auto. Lotus was talking about that. Look at The Outer Worlds 2 took 5 years to come out from the release of The Outer Worlds 1. You know, like, all of
I
these
would
studios.
Argue that also Obsidian are some type of like superheroes because they release games so fast it doesn't make sense by comparison. Right. Just throwing that out there.
Well, they must have the team divided into different groups, kind of like
they've got to,
Bethesda as a studio is different from Bethesda as the publisher. And,
right, for sure.
You know, it's just we got a Doom. We got
Obsidian. Just the pace at which they make games kind of is still mind blowing because again, just like exactly what we're talking about, and they, you know, what was Avowed last year. Outer Worlds
Avowed was
this
earlier
year.
This year. It's like both of those games somehow released in the same year. Yeah,
insane. Yeah.
Actually, they had three games. There was another one that came out as well. I forget what the other third one was, but they had three games released in the same year. But I think it's because their studio is divided up into these like separate.
For sure, it's not the same people doing three. But even still, that's just like that is a wild degree of output comparatively as well.
It is. But here, let's get into the Elder Scrolls 6 timeline. From the same post. In June 2018, Bethesda wrote in the teaser bio that the game was currently in pre-production. I think this was added just to ease the fan base, but let me know what you think. By tracking down old interviews and talking and taking Starfield as an example, we can deduce that the real pre-production phase didn't start until 2020 and lasted until August of 2023 at the latest when the game entered full production. So, a few things here. Pre-production is a very vague term. The fact that that trailer released with music meant that there was already some pre-production. They understood where it was going to be placed. They understood what the music was going to sound like. That is a form of pre-production, but it may not have been a full-fledged pre-production like they're stating in this article, 2020-ish. And then the three-year jump, or two years plus jump to August 2023 when the game enters full production because Starfield's about to just come out. So it looks like we've got similar time frames when you kind of break it down that way. But the trailer kind of puts a kink in it, right? Like 2018 is earlier than they were really committed to getting into pre-production yet.
I also, you know, we'll never obviously probably get the real answer to this, but I back in the day, for anybody who might remember, there was a notable level, I feel, of frustration. This was back when Pete Hines was still their PR guy. I don't remember exactly what his title was, but he was basically their PR or director of marketing, something along those lines. and people even in interviews kind of like, you know, as they're trying to discuss Starfield, people would redirect to like, oh, so where's Elder Scrolls 6? And it's like, well, okay, we're trying to focus on one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. That trailer in a lot of ways almost seemed like maybe it was just put out a little earlier because it was like, oh my God, please look, it's being made. Now leave us alone and let us work on the current right. thing. Like, which right. sounds a little weird.
Right.
Well, it's definitely a vibe that kind of came with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's similar to Fallout Day this year where Todd shows up in the video and is like, hey guys, we read all the comments. I know you're asking for this, this, and this. And trust me, we're working on Fallout stuff. Don't worry. That feels like a more tame version of the teaser trailer for Elder right. Scrolls 6. So instead of dropping like a teaser for Fallout 5, which is going to be another, who knows, 6 years from now.
Right. And that's all anybody talks about right. is the anniversaries of the trailer.
Right. And so it feels like Todd feels like he doesn't want to a lot of people will push back and say, oh, he lies about this and he lies about that. I think he genuinely is trying to do the best he can. Like, I really just kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I feel like he's looking at what the audience is going and they're saying, hey, we love your stuff. And he's like, hey, guys, we're working on it. Like, I can't make it happen faster. And one of the reasons I believe this is because you see it across the board with game developers. Miyamoto talking about Mario games will say the same kinds of things. Hey, we're not going to release a game until it's ready. We're going to push it back. Sorry, it's not coming out this year. You know, the same kind of messaging. I think if you are a game developer in those, in a popular series, then you're going to just have to deal with the fact that people are just going to keep pushing you until you give them what they want. And if it's not exactly what they want, they get upset.
And then they get mad for some reason. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. So I think that's all to say that I think that they've been trying to address the idea that they didn't want news to get out, because you know how news can go, where they're just like, well, they haven't said anything about Elder Scrolls, so they must not be making it.
That's the thing. And it's like, no one... there's no way to actually say this nicely. Nobody could be stupid enough to think they weren't making the Elder Scrolls 6.
Right.
You're not going to make the thing million that prints money? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right. So of course they're going to make it. And you'll hear it in the interview where Todd's like, well, of course Elder Scrolls 6 is the next game we're going to do, because we have to do that.
a lot of people I can at least respect wanted confirmation of it, but it's just like, well, you know. I personally like some of the surprise stuff with this. I don't feel that companies need to go overly secretive, but like having a little thing as a surprise is kind of cool. And I think too, within a normal time frame, I think it's not that big of a deal. But once you start getting into these epic time frames for these games that are going to just be legendarily huge and people have spent thousands of hours with, type of thing.
Yeah.
That's where it starts getting to be like, okay, I need to know something. Like,
yes.
Let me know that it's getting close.
Right. And to on the same topic, Alcatraz in chat says, hasn't Todd said that he would rather have a game be like almost done before revealing it to the public? He has.
Yes.
And we know that that teaser trailer was not Todd's idea. That was the marketing team. That was that was Pete. That was Uncle Pete going, you know, we got to put something out for people because they're going to want to see something.
And I think that came, like I said, my theory was that it came from just the amount of like, look, we'll just show you that it's being worked on. Please stop asking.
Right.
Like this interview is not about the Elder Scrolls. Do not ask Elder Scrolls questions. Stay on topic type of deal.
Right. And so you can see that they've been struggling with that. Like it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing.
Exactly. People are either going to say you're not showing us anything, so you're not working on it, or you end up in the scenario where they did, where everybody's like, oh, they showed it way too early. It's like, because you wouldn't talk about anything else.
Right. So
what do you want?
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you know, we know Todd's justification for doing Starfield. He's always wanted to do a space game, and this was his opportunity before he gets too old to kind of do a thing that he'd been wanting to do, right? We've heard that story. That may be the biggest mistake in the eyes of a lot of Elder Scrolls fans, because we would have had Elder Scrolls 6 by now. It would have come out when Starfield came out.
Correct. Yeah, you would have switched the production schedule and, you know, gotten that instead. And, you know... honestly, I forget which interview it was, but to your point, the thing about Todd really doesn't like to kind of have these super long lead ups. The fact that he loves to just kind of like surprise drop stuff is pretty rare, I think. And it worked so well in some scenarios. I think since it's kind of almost the antithesis of what they're doing in this scenario, where because of that trailer, it's now like, oh my God, look at the lead up time to the Elder Scrolls 6. Whereas Fallout Shelter was stealth dropped.
Yeah.
Just like, it's Oblivion, available now. Oblivion just Remaster, grab the phones under your seats.
Yeah, there were hints that Oblivion Remaster was being done, but they didn't really make an announcement.
They didn't say it until
it
was ready to go.
It's considered the best.
It's considered like the second most popular shadow drop in history, only behind Fallout Shelter.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's some, you got to give Todd credit for that philosophy. Like I would imagine, and this is having been in the corporate world, that the number of meetings there were between design and marketing and sales and the CEO and everybody sitting around the table going, we need to push out a teaser. And Todd's like, guys, we don't need to push out a teaser. And they're like, well, we're going to do it anyway. And then this is what happens, you know? So,
and I've got to say, I'm definitely in the camp with Todd. I would rather have a big surprise reveal with a very short lead up. It doesn't need to be day and date, but I feel the Skyrim release trailer, like, oh, it shows it, and then it's out the next year.
Fallout 4 was June, and then the game came out, like, what, October, November?
October, yeah. That's actually months. Probably the best one. Yeah. Fallout 4, I was so hyped, and like people didn't have time to overspeculate because then the game was already out.
Yeah.
So everybody was just loving
the
game.
And then everyone was playing it, and everyone who liked it was like, oh, this is great. And then they added expansions, and they, you know, the story. Well, there's some other interesting bits in here because the article goes on and it says, if what Todd said about the next game not taking 8 years to develop is true, then we can expect the game to be released in 2026 at the earliest and 2027 at the latest. Bear in mind that Starfield was a difficult game to develop due to its nature and it being a new IP. Elder Scrolls is their bread and butter, and I'm sure the game will not receive any trouble like Starfield because we'll more likely return to a region-based location, maybe two, we'll have to find out. But basically what they're saying is, they know how to develop an Elder Scrolls game. They've done this before. They don't need to deal with traveling to planets and spaceships and generating dozens and dozens of moons and planets out there for you to go to. They're going back to the stuff that they've done so many times now. Design, handcraft a world for us to run around in, put a bunch of NPCs, put a bunch of quests, drop a bunch of dungeons in. Do your thing, right? And they know how to do that. They've been doing that for years.
It's what made them all of the money.
Right, right. And this, and we've talked about this before. I think that the benefit to having Starfield come out before this is going to mean a better Elder Scrolls 6 because they made all their mistakes with Starfield and they're not, I'm assuming, I might be wrong, chances are they're going to pull back a lot of the stuff that people didn't like about Starfield and put more of the stuff people wanted into the Elder Scrolls because they have all that feedback.
I would agree. And something that I've actually loved because I'm a big Fallout fan as well as a big Elder Scrolls fan. Elder Scrolls is obviously my favorite, but I love Fallout as well. One of the things that I find interesting is when one of the games comes out, it will introduce something. And then the next game kind of like amps up that something. And then it becomes kind of a staple. And then there's a new feature that was in that game that becomes an amped up version on the next one. I feel like each one of the games in the series does a couple things trial wise that then is fleshed out more in the next one. Mm-hmm. The housing thing I feel like was probably the most interesting because it was like, they really kind of had the expansion and stuff like that for like your mage's tower and stuff in Oblivion.
Right.
And then it was like, okay,
the homes,
then you've got
homes in Skyrim and then the settlements
the
in Fallout 4
and then settlements
and then your camps and then, in 76. Yeah. Like there's
and
a direct
ship
line
building and you've got supply trading bases in Starfield. And it's like that became a thing type of deal. I feel like they do that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and they're going to build off of, and like they've done in the past, they're going to build off the stuff that works, and they're going to hopefully cut back on the things that people, not the necessarily smaller but loud community, like I don't know that we're going to get spellcrafting again, it'd be cool if we did, I don't know that we're going to get, I don't know, some of the stuff from Morrowind that they haven't done since Morrowind in the next one, like there are certain things that doesn't seem like they're going to go back and do, no matter how much people you know, talk about it on the internet.
Sure. At least bring back spears.
Spears would be great. Yeah. Expanded weapons, expanded animations, those kinds of things. Yeah. But here, let's transition. Let's go to the interview with Lex, Lex Friedman. I know he's a controversial figure over the last few years due to certain political things and stuff like that. We're not going to go into that. I'm pulling this up because this is now a 3-year-old interview and Lex has a habit, as Lotus and I were talking, of just kind of giving the most bland questions. And some of the questions come across like, did you really play Skyrim? But we're going to let that be what it is. And I think there's a kind of accidental benefit to this because it allows Todd to just kind of talk and fill in the blanks. And I think that might be why his interviews work. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But here, let's pull this up. You're going to see it up on top of the screen if you're watching on the YouTube. Let me get the volumes ready. Here we go. Also, we'll stop this every so often and kind of chime in.
Yeah, we're not going to listen to like just the whole 10-minute interview straight.
I mean, it's like a 2-hour.
It's a 2-hour, but even the like snippet we use is like 10. But
So here.
So what's it take to take a game from the idea to find the final product? What are the different steps along the way?
Great question. Well, usually it starts with, I mean, honestly, lunchtime conversations with a number of us. Hey, we think we want to do this. This is what it's going to be like. I mean, look, with an Elder Scrolls, you know you're going to do it. It's a matter of when. You say, okay, what's the tone we're going for, right? Where's it set? So we usually start with the world. And then we're always overlapping. So while we're making one game, as we're, you know, getting in the throes of it or wrapping it up, you know, probably by the midpoint of one game, we've had enough conversations to understand what the next one's going to be. What are the big ticket, like, where's it set? What's the tone? Is there a big ticket feature or two that make it really unique? And then when we're finishing one game, we start prototyping. Sorry, before that, we start concepting. So we'll do concept art. And for one reason or another, I usually have the beginning of the game worked out. I like to think about, okay, how's the game start? What's mm-hmm. the player do first? We do music early, you know. So take Elder Scrolls 6. We figure out where it's set. What's the tone? What are the big features? We discuss the beginning of the game, which we've had for a very long time.
Where's it set again?
Yep.
So that's him dodging the where it's set question, and the answer is Tamriel in a second. But there's a few things here. What he's doing in my understanding of this, looking through the lens of what we just discussed, is he's talking about pre-production and all the things that are involved in pre-production before you get something like a teaser trailer. So he's talking about understanding what the beginning of the game is going to be like, the tone of the game, the setting, where it is, what the music sounds and feels like, basically the broad brush strokes of like, this is what's going to make this game its own thing, different from the rest of the series. And they would have needed to have had those conversations during the time of the development of Fallout 76 in order to have a teaser trailer in 2018, which means that let's call it first stage of pre-production was already done in 2018, in my mind.
I don't think that's unreasonable to assume that that's probably the case, or at least close to it.
Yeah. So here, let's go to, I'm going to transition over to the teaser trailer. I'm just going to click ahead. We're not going to play the entire song, but I don't want to get demonetized, but
oh, yeah,
listen to the music. You can see the, I mean, everyone's seen this teaser trailer 100 times, but listen to the music because it doesn't actually do the main melody of the theme that's been around since Morrowind, but it does hint at it in some of the melody that's played. But listen to the instrumentation that is chosen for this teaser trailer. All right, so I'm going to stop it there, but here's what I want to point out. You have a melody that has the same rhythm aspects, but it's not the melody. It's almost like they're playing harmonic notes, but avoiding the main melody of that. You have
a little bit, yeah.
You have really deep sounding drums, which harkens back to Skyrim, but then you have horns. There's like a French horn in there and a trumpet or a trombone or something that feels more like Oblivion. You notice that?
Yes. Oblivion or Morrowind as well.
Or Morrowind.
It's definitely got,
yeah.
It evokes feelings of that quite a bit. The other thing that I feel, since we're discussing the music portion, that I think might be worth like specifically noting for us hardcore Elder Scrollites, the most well-known composer of the series is not the composer.
Yes.
Due to
personal terrible things, and he basically disappeared off the planet for all we know.
Yes, he's gone, and really it's just poof. However, the person that is working on it from all, you know, that has been seen, Enon Zur has basically been the other guy that works on the series. He's been more known for the Fallout side of things.
Yeah, and he did Starfield too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to say he did Starfield. And the other thing that's actually kind of interesting, because originally when it came out, for anybody who remembers the game The Elder Scrolls Blades, it was their foray into the mobile side of things. But like not as cheesy a mobile game as like maybe Castles.
A little more adventure, like a little less base building, people management.
Base building, yeah. And it wasn't a card game. It was basically trying to make an Elder Scrolls game on a phone, like right. What you would think of as an Elder Scrolls game on a phone. And I actually had a ton of fun with it. But point being, Ino and Zur did the soundtrack to that, mm-hmm. and it's phenomenal. I love it. It sounds like
yeah.
It fits. Yeah. Like he picked up that mantle mm-hmm. and really made it his own, but it still has that same vibe that I feel has been part of the series for quite some time.
Right. Well, they have so much other music to pull from. And on top of
they do.
The Fallout music is great. The Starfield music was great. Like it's going to be good. But the other piece of this I want to point out is you can hear in the song a little bit of a shout, a little bit of a huh. Like there's something there. Let me play just the end part again. Here, listen to this. It's like a oh or something like that. It's buried in there, but you have some vocalization in the song too. So does this give you a feeling of Hammerfell and Daggerfall, like Iliac Bay?
It's one of the things where when that was obviously brought up alongside the video, which, you know, you can watch the trailer. It's got like, I don't know, a gazillion views and has its own anniversary.
Yeah, 1.09 million subscribers. Oh, that's the subscriber. 20 million views.
20 million views yeah, on the trailer. Beautiful.
Yeah.
what do you call it? The thought, obviously... the leading theory is Hammerfell.
Right. And we've talked about this a dozen times, but does it feel like Hammerfell to you? I think
that's one of the big things that I feel helps support that, because I think it does have that feel of...
It feels Redguard-y to you? It feels Imperial to me.
Also, like, not just Redguard-y, because you're also in the Breton area, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's not localized to just, like... the Al'Kir Desert, for example. Like,
right.
I mean? Like, so I feel like the area could be, especially with the scope of the game potentially, I feel like this whole area has the potential to have that, I don't know, it's got like the Redguard feel, the Breton feel, and potentially even some orc action over in that area. And I feel like that just, I thought the music
The big drums could be like orc kind of
kind of
thing.
So it's like, I feel like that definitely invoked the feeling of that region for me. So I'm like, ooh, I feel like that to people really kind of pioneering that. I kind of agree with them, at least from an audio standpoint, for sure.
Yeah. My other thought is that to me, it sounds very Imperial with the trumpets and things, but
sure, which
if
you
break
everywhere.
It, if you, yeah, they're everywhere, but you break it apart, it sounds like a mixing of all of these different kinds of qualities. And that might be because this is a place where these cultures have all kind of mixed together and there's conflict between them or something like that. It could also be that they are using elements of the Skyrim theme in order to transition into the new area. And those elements will disappear as the song unfolds.
Which is, that's an interesting way of looking at it. The other thing too is because we don't know, even if we were correct and this is the area, we don't know the time frame, because there is no continuity where every game is 5 years apart or something like that.
Well, they all seem the next one's always later than the others, except for Elder Scrolls Online.
Elder Scrolls Online, the jump can change. Sure.
Sometimes it's like a very few years, and sometimes it's a few hundred years.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Yeah. Like, we don't know whether we're picking up with this Thalmor's threat still being a thing,
right?
Or has a war already happened and we're catching what's happening as an aftermath, or is it currently going on? Is it still prepping to happen? Like, we don't know where this is going to take place or where in the timeline we're going to land for this next game.
Yeah. And it could be anywhere, really. So,
but that could change demographics quite a bit, even if you know the area.
That's true. That's very true. The area might have been transformed by a new culture that is in charge of the area. Absolutely. Well, here, let's get back to the interview, because basically what he's saying so far is these are the things about pre-production, and those are things that they would have had set in stone. And he's talked about he knew at the beginning of the game was going to be like for a very long time. And that harkens back to us talking about how so much of Elder Scrolls was really solidified in the late 90s, early 2000s. And you can see that in the lore books that we've been going back over in previous episodes. But here, let's continue the interview, because there's more to this.
In Tamriel, and...
damn it. Well, at least we narrowed it down that. Yeah. That would be epic if it was like a portal into another dimension. Anyway.
Then I like to do music. So we've already done a take on the music for Elder Scrolls 6.
Okay, so a take on the music. This interview is 3 years ago. So 2022. So the distance between the trailer and this interview is 4 years. So they've done a take on the music. We've already done a take on the music. Now, this being 3 years ago would mean that they were about to transition from pre-production into full production because Starfield was coming out. So they've clearly put this stuff kind of in the back burner. It's been part of meetings and conversations, and they've already started doing some of the other, like the later pre-production work, like solidifying the music, but it doesn't seem like they were done with it yet 3 years ago.
Right. So that might not be our final cut in the end. Although I feel like people would lose their minds.
Yeah, it'll
trying
be fine.
Trying to process like mm-hmm. a huge shift, but especially if like, could you imagine if that's like your favorite new Elder Scrolls track and it turns out it's actually not even like a final cut.
Right, like that. Right. Well, so hey, it's an early demo version, just like lots of bands do. Yeah. You know, what this goes to show is that the pre-production took longer than would have been expected, because it seems like there was already some pre-production up to 2018 for the trailer, because they've got a location, they've got music, they've got kind of a tone to it, that kind of stuff. Already knew what the intro was going to be like. But then even 4 years after that, they were still wrapping up pre-production because Starfield took so long. So that portion of development, I'm putting this in scare quotes, is longer than the typical 2 to 3 years that pre-production normally happens due to Starfield getting delayed and delayed and delayed, which means that production would have started right at in, I don't know, 2023. Right before Starfield came out, they would have been shifting over to full production, which is only 2 years ago. So here, let's continue the conversation. We just had the best weekend. My daughter came and visited, and I wanted to have an experience that everybody would have a blast with and remember for a long time. So I loaded up the I Expect You to Die trilogy on our MetaQuest 3 VR headset, and oh my gosh, we had so much fun. And you might be thinking, I Expect You to Die, wait, what does that mean? Well, imagine being a retro spy in a world that's trying to murder you on every mission, and you have to figure out how to get through the puzzles, how to not get shot by lasers, how to launch a car out of the back of an airplane. That is the first thing you do in the first game, and my son was able to complete that quest. Later on, when we got to the third game, we were setting off explosives in an underwater base. We used Chromecast to project it up on the TV, and we all played together. One person would put the headset on, and they'd look around, and they'd try to figure out the puzzles, while the rest of us would say, well, look over there, and what did that note say? And we figured it all out. It was like having an escape room in our living room for the entire weekend. We'd take breaks and go out for dinner, and then we'd get home, and I'd say, what do you guys want to do? And they're like, let's play more of I Expect You to Die. And I was like, holy crap, this is so much fun. Oh, and believe me, they died, but they also figured out the puzzles. And the settings and the characters were hilarious and really well done. There's like a storyline that goes from the first game to the second game and then to the third. And you're Agent Phoenix and they keep trying to kill you, but you keep coming back. It's such a great time. And I've been a fan of this game for a while. This was just my first opportunity to play it with her and everybody in the house at the same time. But what's really cool is that they're sponsoring the podcast, and they've decided to give our listeners, for the next 60 days, 45% off with a code you can use on your MetaQuest account. So put in Elder Rising, capital E, capital R, Elder Rising dash 8904FC. Again, Elder, capital E, Rising, capital R, all one word, dash 8904 capital F, capital C, 45% off this amazing experience. It's not even just a game, it's an experience. Go pick it up, and if you can't remember the code, it'll be in the description, so don't worry. Oh, and believe me, I expect you to die, and have an awesome time doing it. It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
So you can sit there with the concept art and the music, and you can feel it.
No, the music, we put in the teaser for it. This was 2018. We've taken that further, obviously. And again, we're working on the world. You're then doing concepting and design for the world. And then once we're wrapping up one game, we can really start prototyping the new one. And you're usually building kind of your initial spaces. And so we do like to do like a first playable, a smaller section of the game that we can sort of prove out and show to people, hey, this is how it feels different. This is what it looks like. This is what's unique about it. Then we turn that into a larger chunk when more of the team comes on, when the other game is done.
Okay, so I'm going to pause there. The feeling I get for this, and this is just a gut thing, is that that early chunk is fresh in his mind in this interview because it's something they just started working on. Mm-hmm. And we're probably about to finish by the summer before Starfield came out so that they could get that done and go, okay, we know what this early chunk of the game looks like. It feels like how the characters walk around, how the combat, just rough, you know, just a rough outlines of the combat, the world, the way the game feels, right? So that they can use that as a template for, okay, this is the feel. We've got all the other stuff set up, and this is what it's like to be in that world. Then they move to full production, which they would have transitioned to with the launch of Starfield, which would have been just about 2 years ago right now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because again, whether it's intentional or not, usually the thing that is most recent, that's why recency bias exists. It's on your mind. So it would make sense.
Yeah, I feel like there are certain things in this interview that were on his mind because they were the things that the studio was prepping or currently doing. And it starts to feel kind of clear. I've watched through this a few times. It feels like those are things that are like on the tip of his tongue and really fresh and not so much speculation from him looking into the future of development, right?
Right. Nope, I would agree with that.
All right, so let's keep going.
And that's still what we call a VS, vertical slice. So you still don't have the full team on it. And it's a larger chunk of the game that you can play. And then once you feel good about that, you're going to bring on the rest of the team. And we're fortunate that the other games we've done are popular enough that we can be doing DLC and content and those kind of things while we're getting the one going. And then we're at full production where we're sort of at maximum size. We just call that production. That's like the full production period.
Now, I get the sense that they're obviously not there yet as of this interview, that's what they're currently gearing up to. And now he's talking about the future. That's what this feels like in just the way he's using language. I can't pinpoint the specific words, but that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And also it kind of fits the timeline that we've been talking about. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So he's talking about going to full production once the game, the previous game releases. They're, you know, doing DLC, but now they're able to transition to full production. Everybody has an understanding of what that's supposed to look like. And then we get this.
And that, depending on the game, you know, can run a year, 2 years, maybe more.
And so he's talking pre-production after the game came out. So after Starfield comes out, when they transition into full production, that can last a year, 2 years, maybe more. We are now, as of today's date, 2 years past that.
We are now entering maybe more.
Yeah, we're entering the maybe more territory. But when you look back at, I mean, again, Starfield got delayed. That lasted 3 to 4 years, which was unprecedented. But when you look at their other games, the other games that they've done in the past, that process of full production is usually about 2 to 3 years. That seems to be pretty standard. And it was shorter than that earlier. As we've discussed, development got longer over time. But he seems to still have the expectation that within 2 to 3 years of full production, you get to a place where the game moves into like the polishing stage. He's about to talk about that.
Then you kind of have a finalizing final 6 months to a year on a game, which is, okay, we've built everything now. And usually it needs a lot of glue, where we have a lot of very different elements that maybe aren't clicking together the way you want outside of the regular polish for levels and features. And we're shaving and gluing and sticking things together so that it's not this schizophrenic game experience, that things flow from one into another.
In terms of story, like on that level?
It's really, no, usually the story, the designers have done a really good job. It's more about game features, you know, and then how they interact with the story, or, hey, I went from this experience to this experience, or picking flowers and alchemy feels like a different game than, and then how is another character referencing that, and how is that intersecting with the skill system and the interface? Like,
all right, so I'm going to pause it there. So a few things here. It takes that final stage, which is not the right title for it, but I'm going to call polish. Polish can mean many different things, but I'm calling it the polish stage, right? You have all of the features. The story's done. The world's done. The characters are all in it. Animations work. Combat works. Everything works. You can play through the game. But what he's saying here is that there's a final stage that's 6 months to a year of going through and just making sure that everything fits together, that everything makes sense, that the interface works correctly. And he goes into further detail in this interview. Go look it up on Lex's clips. There's this 10-minute version of this section of the interview. But that's specifically what he's talking about here, is you do the extra work to make sure the game feels like it's one cohesive structure, that nothing stands out too much from everything else. And he goes into, later on in the conversation, he talks about how like the talent tree kind of pulls you through the game, and you go, oh, well, this is the ability I want, but I want to go to that ability next. So I'm going to start doing these things in the world that lead to the unlocking of abilities. And that kind of pulls you through your character design, and the features work well. He talks about combat and how he doesn't, you know, if you make the enemies too smart, it's frustrating. And every game does this, where they have to dumb down the enemies so they take turns attacking you and that sort of thing. But it's generally not something you pay attention to, because when there's six enemies there, you're kind of overwhelmed anyway, because they're all right there. But
one of the things I like that he even mentions is, like, even so much as like down to picking alchemy ingredients, which is really interesting, because that was one of the things that was a weird thing to have as a focus point, but so funny that people were discussing like the way alchemy worked, like picking flowers and stuff like that in the Oblivion remaster, and it just felt good. Like they did a great job making it. It's like, well, yeah, you're kind of plucking it, like it feels good.
Right. And it makes sense in your interface. It makes sense when you're mixing up a potion. The interface works correctly. It all ties back together. And this is one of the things. And again, this is just my speculation on this, but this is one of those things that I think took extra long for Starfield, was trying to work out this stuff, the polishing, the getting out the rough edges out of it. And we know in Starfield that you were originally going to have to use fuel to fly to one place to another, and you could run out of fuel and get stranded. And there were all these other elements that they gutted out of the game because they just weren't fun. And he talks about the focus of it needs to be fun. It needs to feel like something you want to come back and do more of, and all of that. So if we're looking at the timeline, we're now 2 years of full development. This will be the year that they move into the polish stage, which, let's discuss when this is coming out, because clearly it's not this year. But if they've really nailed the development part of this and they feel like there isn't a ton of polish that needs to be done, then we are within a year of release.
Crazy talk.
Could happen. So what does that look like? Well, Maybe they release another teaser for the Game Awards in December and do that 15 years since the Game Awards announcement for Skyrim kind of thing. That could happen if they're not 100% sure that this is coming out within the next year, or if Todd has his way and doesn't want to reveal it yet, then the next window for an announcement is probably June. We'll probably get an announcement in June and a release in the fall. If we don't get an announcement and a trailer in June, then we're probably waiting till 2027. We're probably going through another year of the calendar because this is a big game. They're not going to launch it outside of the end of the year holiday window, right? Because that's where you sell the most games.
That would be shocking for them to do. And also, whereas before, I feel like that could have been the case, I will be shocked if we see this any place but a Microsoft-specific conference, since they own this. This is when they were independently owned. I mean, they did end up having their own conference at E3 when E3 was a thing, like beforehand even, but you know, they were still a, by comparison, smaller company like to others. Now that
Microsoft, yeah, next to Sony and Microsoft, yeah, absolutely,
right, right, yes. Exactly. But it's like, you know, they were still one of like the, you know, the big publisher, but they weren't like Blizzard size or, you know, EA, anything like that. Microsoft, Sony, obviously, but with Microsoft doing things like and owning the company and the IP, I feel like they are going to really want the announcement for this to be focused around them, even though I stand by the fact, despite how many people back in the day told me that I'm a lunatic when this happened, I think this is multi-platform, like right out the gate.
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of the things Microsoft has been doing. They're dropping all sorts of stuff on Sony.
And before they were doing that, I was saying that this was going to be it. I was like,
you were right.
No,
you were
not
right before
going
other people
to do that.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, whatever, agree to disagree with everybody who disagreed with me on that one. I still think that's going to be the case. But I think they're going to want the reveal to be on something that people make the association to Microsoft specifically.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It will be everywhere, but we want people to know this is a Microsoft thing because this is like a video game world changer, the way you get with a Grand Theft Auto or something like
that. Right, right. It is one of the biggest series ever made for video games.
So I do not think, with the way that media is distributed nowadays, I do not think they will share this announcement with anyone. So if it's not their conference, I do not think they will put it there.
Right. Which means most likely we'll get an announcement in June.
Like a June.
Or QuakeCon might be a thing.
Yeah, QuakeCon during
that
the summer.
At the end of the summer. So beginning of summer, end of summer. And if it doesn't happen in those windows, then it's going to be like, for example, Microsoft has been doing like a January kind of thing where they talk about the games coming out this year and that kind of thing. So that could happen in January. So those are the windows. And I think that there is a chance. So you're telling me there's a chance. There is a chance.
Tell me there's a chance.
There's a chance that we get this a year from now. There's an even greater chance that within 2 years that we get it. I don't think it's 3 years out. I think we're within 1 to 2 years. Do you agree?
I want to say yes.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of hopium too, right?
I want to say yes. But every year that goes by, my joke announcement of 2035 gets closer and closer, and it makes me very sad.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, who knows? We don't really know.
But no, I mean, there's no way that, well, I guess it's not no way, but I was going to say, I would think within the next 2 to 3 years, we finally have this. Yes, yeah. I would agree with you.
The big shame is that there isn't a really fun date, you know, like 11-11-11 or something like that.
That's the thing. And I was going to say, what was more was you could tell, because Todd loves that stuff to begin with, but like, 11-11-11 is just like the date. Everybody will always have that tethered to Skyrim. And it's like, there was supposed to be that for,
Starfield.
Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. Cause I bet that was a very sad day. So I don't know what day.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Sure
I've been thinking through the dates a little bit.
Come,
yeah. It was like 12, 22, 26. Nah, 11, 22, 26. No, like 1-1-1-2-2-6. No, like there's like the 2-6 or 2-7 makes it weird.
Right.
And I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If you have some ideas, if there's like a number that you're like, oh, this number would totally make sense because it says this in Leet Speak or something. I don't know. Right. Then let us know.
What cool date do you think the Elder Scrolls?
Yeah, comment, jump in the Discord. Let us know what you think. But there you go. I think that's enough evidence to say that we are within a few years. And maybe you're going, well, duh, that's obvious. But I think that taking a look at the actual amount of development time for pre-production and production and polish and putting that together with the delays puts us at 26 or 27.
The only thing I will say of the like concept of the like, well, duh, we've sort of had that joke for a long time and then it's missed every window that we've predicted.
That's true.
Just, I mean, as general media, not us specifically, but just like in general, it's just like, oh, nope, still not here. Nope, still not here.
Yeah. Yeah. Barky says 8/8/26. That'd be nice. That'd be nice. All right. 2 + 6 = 8. So it's like 8/8/8. Got it. It's like 3/8/8/88. Right. No, that, I'm not going to be alive.
No,
I will not. I will have shuffled off the mortal coil. I will be in Sovereign Guard. I'm not a Nord. What am I? I don't even know what I am. But anyway, there you go. Let us know your thoughts. See if everyone's welcome to their own opinions. This is just a look at some of the data and where things seem to be going. Oh, and by the way, if you're watching this on YouTube and for some reason you keep watching Elder Scrolls games, even though you hate Bethesda now and you think they'll never make a good game again, please comment below and tell us how terrible they are and how this game's going to suck, because everybody loves those comments. Also, maybe go find a hobby other than watching videos about things that you hate. Cool.
I'm hate watching. Well, 3/3/33, the year that we get the Elder Scrolls. There it is. Oh. You know what? So that's 2 years before my original joke prediction that I made like 6 years
ago. I hope that's not right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We got to go thank our patrons and wrap up the show. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. And thanks for those angry comments below. Love those. They help boost the algorithm, by the way, so we really do appreciate it. But we don't have any new patrons to shout out this week, but if you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/elderscrollslorecast. Sign up, get some ad-free episodes, get on the show, join us for our patron chats every month at the end of the month, all of that stuff. That's all there. And also, I have to shout out our Daedric Princes, who get shout-outs every week. Kira C, Hersin, Peter R, and Austin B, thank you so much for your continued support. Also, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it out on a future episode. I don't have any new ones this week, but leave some words. I'll read those out. If I can see them here in the US, it's gotten weird. I used to be able to see more than this, but I can only see the ones local now. So we've got that. But Lotus, let's wrap this up and then do our random UESP page. I've got it right here. I just hit the button.
Beautiful.
And it's up. But you got anything going on you want to share?
No, I was going to say we've been just doing the Writhing Wall event and stuff like that when I get some time to play the Elder Scrolls online. But honestly, I've been scattered to playing something not in series, which is unusual for me because, man, Battlefield 6 has been super fun. So I have been distracted with something outside series for a bit. But that aside, we do have some stuff that we're hoping to record a new episode of Tales of Tamriel coming up. And basically look for it in the coming weeks. We're going to be doing and releasing planning for our yearly charity marathon to support Extra Life. Details on that are going to start forming and we're going to start talking about giveaways and all that fun stuff. It is always a super fun time. It's a little more tricky for me to plan as of recently. But we made it work last year and I intend to make it work again this year. So stay tuned. We'll have lots more to talk about with that, how you can donate to this awesome cause, and again, all the fun prizes and stuff we get to give away on behalf of everybody who supports the cause. So
yeah, always fun. Always a fun event. So good luck with that. That's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah, you can check out my other shows, the Fallout Lorecast, the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. I'm launching a new show. I made an announcement as of tomorrow with the Fallout episode that's coming out, where I'm recapping season one of the TV show before season two comes out. But I'm doing a new show. I'm doing a show with John from the 40K Lorecast, who joined the network earlier this year, we're doing a show called Retro Recall, where we go back and we play games we haven't played in 30 years and see how we feel about them. It's going to be YouTube first, but also audio. So if you want to be able to see the clips that we're mentioning, check out the YouTube Retro Recall, or you check it on audio. It's not launched yet, but will be in the next like 2 weeks. We'll have the first episode out, and it's a lot of fun. It's a highly edited, like very intentionally put a lot of work into it kind of thing. And I hope everybody loves it, because it's been a lot of fun, and it's all about the nostalgia.
I've finally announced this since I knew about this, because I've been eager to actually listen to this.
Yeah. It's all about the nostalgia. I think the first episode's like Mega Man 2, which is one of the best NES games ever. And we've banked a number of episodes to release them. We've done like Double Dragon, Duke Nukem 3D is one of the ones we've mega played.
See, this is why I'm weird with nostalgia. People are like, oh man, it's tough to go back to it. And I'm like, nope, it plays exactly like I remember.
Oh man, it's interesting. And John and I have different perspectives. We're almost the same age, but his perspective on some of these games is a little bit more favorable than mine. I tend to be more skeptical. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the other piece about this is that because he's the one who picks the games out and makes me play them, I challenge him to do something in the game, and the loser has to then play one of the worst games ever made.
Oh God.
And so at the end of each show, you get to see somebody explain how they suffered, and then clips of them suffering through a terrible game. So it's amazing. It's totally up your alley of suffering through old games. Uh-huh. Yep. So it's going to be fun. It'll be up in a few weeks. I'll remind you on future episodes. It's going to be super cool. Hey, we've got a random page. You ready, Lotus?
Let's do this. How random is it?
It's very random this time. Sometimes we get like characters from Elder Scrolls Online, or we get like a book from Skyrim or something. This is in the section mod/Morrowind, Tamriel data, items, notes, books. What?
All right. That's a lot of category distilling, but sure.
Yeah, that is quite the little rabbit trail to get to this. It's a Tamriel data, merchants to sail for Akavir, ? A report on a wildly ambitious potential trade mission to Akavir. Okay. This is added by Tamriel Data, IDT News, AB Monitor 11, a weight of 0.2. I think it's a mod. I think this is like
it's got to be a mod.
It's a Morrowind mod.
Yeah, there's just so many book. Specific notes that make it sound like it has to be a mod.
Yeah, it's just a book. There's a little image at the top that says the Abessian Monitor, which has a little ship on it. Merchants seek funds for Akavir trade mission. And then there's like a little script down here where it's like merchant brothers, so-and-so and so-and-so spoke with the monitor about this thing. It's a little interview. Thank you for your agreeing to discussing remarkable plans of yours. How do you come by the inspiration for such a scheme? And I'm not going to read the whole thing. But
this sounds very random. I'm not going to lie to you.
This is super random. It's just a mod. It's like a little interview from a mod. So this is why the USP is freaking amazing, because it has even this kind of stuff there. So
it's all going to be there somewhere.
Yep. It's all there somewhere. Like in mod/Morrowind, Tamriel Data, Items, Notes, Books. That's my new band name.
Ooh. Rolls right off the tongue.
Right off the tongue. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Chat, thank you so much for being here. Love all the comments and different thoughts and speculation. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And maybe we should keep a list running on the Discord of dates, and everyone gets to predict a date.
I was about to say, like, some of the recently people have had some real fun ideas or comments on some of our stuff. I would love, we should have like make some type of chart where we can all try to guess when the date is and see who's right.
Like a shared calendar, and everyone can just pick like a date on the calendar.
Everybody pick your dates.
We'll see. And then we'll have to somehow lock it so people can't change it when like the announcement comes up and be like, look, I got it. It was right there.
Well, look, suddenly 5,700 people all got the same date. Weird.
How'd they do that? Weird. So thanks for hanging out, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, if you got any more insight from, the Todd, let us know.
8888.
All right. See you all later. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.